This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest series on the Authentic Persuasion Show. You know my mission is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. My target is 1 million authentic persuaders out there in the world of sales, selling, and what that would do for the world of sales, the industry of sales. And I love having these conversations because I have my mission and what I want and what I see. And then also the guests that I have, especially this season, with professional sales educators and leaders of these professional sales programs at universities are doing the same thing to change the way sales is done, to put a different level of professionalism out there in the world from the beginning of people entering in sales instead of people just falling into it or thinking they just go into sales to make a lot of money. There's more intentionality about it. And I am super excited for this conversation, for this series, because I have Dr. Tim Butler from Southeastern Louisiana University. And in his words, Dr. Tim teaches sales and marketing at Southeastern Louisiana University and is the co-director of the professional sales program with Dr. April Kemp, who I've also recorded an episode series with. The sales program at Southeastern has recently celebrated 5 years of existence and has been accredited as an associate member of the University Sales Center Alliance, which is a big deal. We'll talk about that definitely in part three of the future of sales. Dr. Tim, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
I know this is going to be fun. You know, again, the University Sales Center Alliance, which we'll talk about at the end, is really trying to create a standard for sales programs and universities. And right now, everyone's kind of doing their own thing, and some people are participating together. Some people are just kind of going at it. And I love the fact that you guys have been doing this for 5 years and building it the way you did. Before we get into that kind of stuff, let's take a step back. You do sales and marketing as your focus with teaching. Where did you begin in sales and or marketing? And then how did that journey lead into higher education?
Well, I guess I have kind of a unique story, but so does everybody, right? But I studied pre-law in undergrad. And coming out of school in 2002, my first kind of job opportunities were sales, retail, marketing type related jobs. And so I kind of experienced what our sales students don't experience, which is not really knowing what I was doing. But one thing I discovered when I was working was that I really liked marketing, and I just realized I had no training. So I went back to graduate school in 2007, University of Alabama, got my master's degree, and then decided to go into the PhD program there. And in 2011, I had the opportunity during one of my years in the PhD program to work for the University of Alabama sales program. And Joe Calamusa, who's the director there, got to kind of understand what was happening in sales education. I hadn't programs like that existed until I was exposed to it at Alabama.
And so what was your sales career, sales jobs like before going to school? Or was it a realization that those were the opportunities, you liked marketing and you just went straight into higher, you know, going into your master's?
Well, I had retail sales jobs, but then I also had a commission only life insurance job that I really worked hard at, but it was a really challenging space. And I was going kind of door to door with very tenuous appointments. So it was pretty cold, a lot of that interaction. So I had some experience selling on that side and then also in the banking in terms of loans and accounts and things like that.
And what was your thought about sales? What did you feel like it involved or included or what it took to be successful, especially in the jobs that you had? And then let's say prior to working with Joe.
Well, I thought it was really cool. I thought it was involved people in a very interesting business type of way. So that's what kind of got me interested in marketing after graduation. and not really wanting to go down to go to law school and do all those things. But I didn't really know much about it. I had no training. I walked into a marketing class in undergrad and walked out. Didn't think it was going to be a good class, which is kind of funny since I ended up being a marketing professor. But something about that class that, you know, it was kind of an elective that I was thinking about taking and ended up not even taking it. So I knew I kind of fell in love with marketing and sales in that more practical sense after graduation and realized that I didn't really have any training. I just knew I liked people. I liked thinking about how people make decisions and how it all comes together in an economic sense.
And so how did that play into what you focused on both in master's and the PhD program with, I'm going to guess, marketing specifically, like that decision-making process, dealing with people, helping people? Like, how did you view that, or what research or what has your focus been on that side?
So I was a regular marketing student until I worked for the sales program. In the sales program, I was in the sales class with Joe. I was in the lab serving as a buyer. And so learning about how sales education is delivered, what we were doing in terms of, we had a Frito-Lay based case that we were and having students will play through a conversation with a Walmart buyer. And so kind of learned a lot about how that all worked and how sales education worked. And the example I always use is, student came and said, oh yeah, you know, this company offered me a job, but the base was only 35 or something back at that time. And most of my experience was you either got zero or one job offer when you graduated. And so you, if you got the one, you took it. But what I was seeing these students start to do is leverage multiple job opportunities and have some negotiation power in terms of choosing one that had the right culture, the right compensation, the right geography, which I thought was amazing. And it really kind of got me fascinated with the ROI of higher education. And I think that's really important for all universities to focus on, especially given how much information is accessible out there without going to school. So we need to be thinking about what do we do at universities that can really bring value to students. And in the context of sales programs, we do some pretty interesting things with connecting them to specific opportunities, helping them network, teaching them much more skill-based things like how to communicate effectively, how to problem solve, things like that, that I think ultimately put our students at a huge advantage coming out into the job market relative to non-sales students.
So this podcast obviously is about sales. This episode is mostly focused on authenticity. Where do you see that coming into play in sales and marketing? You can address both sides because I think it's all related, right? Because marketing is setting up sales and sales should be giving feedback to marketing. But the authenticity piece with the students you're teaching, you know, and maybe what they think about sales or think sales requires, and then, you know, kind of how you're teaching them that part.
Well, one thing that all the sales programs that I know focus on is ethical selling, right? And so in order to be ethical, you have to be transparent, you have to be authentic, you have to really care about the customer and what they need. So as much as we get the students who really are competitive and want to be motivated by the opportunity to make more money and have success, we really teach a way of selling that is the most effective, which is be ethical, do the right thing, sleep well at night, and then make money doing it. So in terms of as a role, I always teach them, I said, you know, I'm not a perfect teacher and salespeople aren't perfect. And that's okay because nobody's perfect. So if you were to be perfect in your communication, people would be suspect of that, right? So I think that's one thing that they think is that they don't have the confidence, they don't have the communication ability to be good at sales. When I find that in sales or in life, when you interact and you make mistakes, as long as you're not making mistakes all the time and messing everything up with a customer, it just shows that you're a human being that's fallible. And when you come back and you solve problems that you may have even created, or you do things like that, you create an authentic relationship and you show them a human that they're dealing with. And that's really the competitive advantage of working with a salesperson versus something that you can do online or without interpersonal communication involved.
Why do you think that lack of perfection, let's say, helps to build that authentic relationship? Why is that more effective than being perfectly perfect?
Well, I guess, again, when you see something perfect, like on social media, if somebody has a really curated image, right, you're immediately skeptical of, well, is that what their life is really like, right? So when someone is perfect with their communication, or always has the right answer and always has a positive answer, as a customer, I think you start to be suspicious of, is this person telling me the truth? Is this person being transparent with all the information? So when you do provide good news and bad news, and there are mistakes made, because, you know, you could be the perfect salesperson, but then something happens in operations that interferes with the value delivery, then you got to go out there and solve that problem. So I think what most people are very forgiving of little errors here and there, but what really builds a relationship is the effort, like, that they see when you see that something goes wrong. And if you can be proactive, it's even better, and reach out and say, hey, yeah, I know that delivery didn't work out too well. Have that conflict with that customer and solve it. I think that's a more authentic, transparent relationship. And so that lack of perfection actually, I think, builds a true, like, business relationship, where they see you as another human who's not perfect, but is doing everything they can to try to help you.
And so based on what you're saying, it sounds like obviously there's the effort, but then also intention, like the intention of the salesperson behind everything versus, you know, needing to be perfect. Is that right?
Yeah. And you kind of look at salespeople, they work for the organization, but they really are the only customer advocate in the organization that you're working with. So your job as a salesperson is to coordinate internal resources to deliver the value that you promised when we met and I decided to partner with that company. So as somebody who does that, you need to make sure that you build these internal relationships that you can go and solve problems that may come up. And if you're in a sales position, and it's B2B, or it's high paying, it's probably got a lot of complexity to it. So complex problems that you're solving for customers are not always going to go perfectly smoothly, but as long as you put in that effort to solve the problem, then they see the value of the salesperson. And if they see you as an advocate in that company to make sure that you get what you promised them they would get, I think that is kind of really effective in building sales and business relationships.
So this, I don't want to say philosophy, but this ideal or idea of authenticity being built on not necessarily having to be perfect. You know, obviously mistakes are okay, not to intentionally make mistakes, but obviously they're okay. How do the students take that when you kind of explain that to them versus what they think maybe it is required to be successful in sales?
Well, I think it's a relief, right? That, okay, this is what it takes. And I would say that you have to get stronger at communication, right? You have to get better. I'm constantly trying to get better in the classroom because I know the way I deliver the information is where teachers add value, right? So you have to get better you have to be persuasive, you have to do all these things. But to know that it's more accessible, I think makes some students who never thought they would be interested in sales kind of lean in a little bit more and also see that sales is not exactly what they might have thought coming into the class.
It makes sense. And where is that balance? I guess for me, part of my brain worries that someone says, okay, so I can build a more authentic relationship if I'm not perfect, if I make mistakes. So if I just am not perfect and I make mistakes on purpose, people will trust me more, right? And almost using it as a tactic or a strategy. Like, do you see that come up much, or am I just, you know, projecting too much on the salespeople and their motivations?
Well, I think mistakes are going to occur naturally, so you don't have to necessarily manufacture them, right? But it's also just being about, there's going to be issues. Like if you're a remote salesperson, there's going to be issues with a Zoom call or being late to an appointment or all these little things that may happen. And you do everything you can to prevent them. But when they do come up, you acknowledge them, you own it, because they know that down the road, there's going to be some issues with the company that's going to create a conflict, which is either going to make them want to leave or stay if you show that you're putting in the energy and effort to resolve that problem. So they want to see that you actually want to work with them, and that when there is a problem that you acknowledge it and try to resolve it at the best way you can. That gives people the patience to say, hey, I'm going to stick with this guy and this company and not look for other options, competitors to maybe switch to. So it's kind of that balance.
What do you think gets in the way of salespeople being more or being fully authentic?
Well, I think the one thing we've been talking about in sales programs is the rubric that we use to kind of judge sales role play, sales competitions, and does it make people too scripted, right? So I think if you learn a sales process and you become very robotic and you're not living in the moment and really having a true, authentic conversation, that's where problems start coming up. So you have to be careful with that.
I could totally see that. I had Joe Calamusa on the podcast, and we talked about that as well, which, you know, from a grading perspective, it has to be objective, right? You don't want to build a process that's subjective, because then how do you determine what student did what and how to grade them? It's got to be objective. But then where is that balance, right? Because if it's to grade by a rubric, it has to fall in these buckets. To fall in these buckets, it can't be subjective, like, oh, your authenticity was subjective or not. It was your script following was objectively there or not, right?
Exactly. And so one line that kind of came down from Joe that I use is, we teach you the science of sales, and you add your own personality. You add the flair, you add the more subjective items. And we try to empower them to do that while they're here, but more so when you're leaving, because we're putting on the training wheels and we're teaching you the basics of sales. But I'm not trying to get them to divorce themselves from their own personality and their own authentic way of doing things. So it's a tough balance. You want it to do that. And so even if it's very clunky, I'd rather them just follow the process at first, because those are the things they need to learn. That you usually don't have to learn how to be yourself and to be an authentic person, right? You just have to be empowered to do that. So, but you do need to learn kind of the nuts and bolts of what that looks like. But one thing I always try to warn students about when we're teaching them this process is that avoid scripts. Just make this part of your muscle memory, all these best practices, so that you incorporate them seamlessly, but as if you're saying it for the first time. Nobody wants to hear something and say, this salesperson said this to people 75 times. So you have to deliver things in an authentic way, even if it's things you've said similar things to similar customers in the past. They want a live interaction that they feel is super authentic to that moment. So you have to kind of be devoted to that. So companies, I think, make mistakes when they get too structured with their sales training and their sales scripts and everything else, because all that kind of interaction can be done via computer, via AI, via other methods, right? So we don't need salespeople to go and just deliver information. They really got to be there live, absorbing information and customizing what they say based on what they're hearing from the customer.
Which makes so much sense. I love what you said about the script and the scripting. You need to obviously commit it to muscle memory. And I think that's important so that it sounds, like you said, authentic and not being read, really not robotic and labored, right? Not so much forced, but just like labored. But of course the value, and for people who say, yeah, like no more scripts, like the value of scripts is that you're consistent. You're doing the same thing, right? Kind of like golf. Like you, when you're swinging, you get your swing to muscle memory. So you don't have to think about it, but it's as consistent as possible every single time. So many salespeople hate the thought of scripts and think scripts just control them. It's like, no, scripts are just all the parts in your toolbox that you say the same exact way so that you are getting the results that you want every single time, right? As much as possible. And then going back to something you said in the beginning when you're responding is talking about the training wheels and the structure. And I love that. I think really what it comes down to is the expectation being set. And this could be for these sales programs. It could be for a company and they're putting someone through the training. The expectation isn't, I'm going to make you awesome at every part of every conversation you're going to have at sales. It's, I'm going to teach you the fundamentals. And it's funny you brought up the analogy of like a bicycle with training wheels. I could just see that. Like, that's what you're doing in these programs. Here's riding a bike. Here's training wheels. Here's me holding on to the seat as well, right? And then once you get out there, you take the training wheels off and then you learn. And then someday you'll be popping wheelies or riding with no hands on the handlebars. But that's not what we're doing in this class or, you know, with this program, right?
Yeah. And I think a challenge we face in sales programs that we're working on is do all that, but then also present them with totally different customer needs in multiple role play scenarios so that they understand that they have to be flexible. So if you say, hey, you need to ask questions during this needs identification discovery period, many students who are really attentive and analytical say, okay, what are the questions? And so a lot of those questions are based on what did they say to your first question? So you may prepare a few questions, but you have to customize your follow-ups. And that is uncomfortable for some people who are not comfortable thinking on their feet. So we have to also kind of work in that flexibility and that the best salespeople are taking the information that's being provided to them and incorporating it in real time. And that's why it takes so much mental agility and mental strength. And it, you know, it's a challenging job because at the end of the day, if you've done it right, you've used your mind in a way that is pretty strenuous, right? Because you've actually listened, you know, and just to kind of go off of one thing I teach is that listening's hard. Nobody likes listening. If you think about friends' conversations, it's often, let me wait for that person to talk so I can just say what my example, which is cooler and better, right? But the really great friends are people who are actually listen to what you say and then ask you another question. Well, how'd that make you feel? Or some, you know, dig on that situation because it's demonstrating active listening. It's demonstrating that you're taking in the information they're giving you and people want to be heard, right? They want to have that audience. So that's the gift you give them as a salesperson, but it's very challenging because we're used to wanting to communicate our position, right? So it's hard to kind of take in other people's information and adapt to them.
It's so hard. And what I tell everybody is that, you know, the moment you'll be successful in sales is the moment where you no longer have to think about what you're going to say next, and you can actually just listen to somebody. And one thing I've learned about the programs that like you're involved with is a lot of it comes down to just teaching that confidence, teaching that through role playing and learning the science part, that you see enough scenarios, you know that you have questions, you know, you learn how to listen and then have more questions on deck at all times, and that confidence to be able to listen more than like fighting for the sales side.
Yeah. And in these sales competitions that we do, we had a student who won a big sales competition in the fall. And I would say that our students do well to the extent that we prepare them as much as possible for the case and the situation, but then they go in there without coaching from us, they're one-to-one, and who wins them are the ones that not only have prepared and thought about all these different things to say, but ones that sit in the moment, absorb the clues that the, because in, especially in a role play, they're giving you clues because it's designed to be a process that leads to the sale. Versus you meet with a real customer, there might be a situation where there's just not a need, right? But there's always a sale in a competition. It's just they're giving you the particular angles that you would need to take and the particular priorities and value that that buyer has. And the student who won was able to, he was just really great at emotional intelligence. He was really great at figuring out, okay, if you're saying this, that probably means that I should focus on this part of our solution that would best address that issue. So figuring all that out is kind of important.
Well, and I think what's great about that example is that, again, it's listening, it's being a part of it and picking up those clues, right? Like I've heard it enough other times throughout this podcast where, you know, guests, other professors said the buyers will tell you what they're looking for and give you the clues, give you the answers to the test, right? You just have to be aware enough to do that. And I love how you said, like, sometimes it's just, you can't sell somebody, right? The need isn't there, the value, maybe the budget really isn't there, the timing. In those competitions, it is closable. You just have to figure out what is the path to get there. And I love that. And where, again, that's where the science versus the art, you can teach the science and then that person has to bring the art side. And I'm super excited because the second part of our conversation is going to be on persuasion, the sales process. And there's even more that I know that you share about that. And I'm excited to talk about on the second part. As we wrap this up, I just want to share with the audience here, if you want to get in touch with Dr. Tim, you can find him, Dr. Tim Butler on LinkedIn. He's very active. He posts a lot of stuff. Some professors kind of, they don't do a lot on LinkedIn. And then some professors like Dr. Tim do a lot and post a lot. So make sure to follow him, engage with him, you know, chat with him if there's something you want to talk about. And then also the Southeastern Louisiana University website. The links will be in the show notes, but it's selu.edu/sales. Dr. Tim, thanks for being here on the show, talking about authenticity. And I can't wait for part two.
Thank you, Jason.
And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to continue with us in this conversation. Come back for part two. Whenever you're listening to this, we're going to talk about persuasion, sales process. Like I said, I'm very excited because I already know some of the stuff we're going to talk about and see where it goes from there. And thank you, as always, for being here, being a part of this journey, and helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.